Not too long ago, I found myself in a family break room in a hospital. I was there spending time with a loved one. And as I was walking through the break room on the way to the microwave, I stopped because there was this large bulletin board on the wall. And it was covered with dozens and dozens of post-it notes. And so I stopped to look at what these post-it notes, they were post-it notes of inspiration and of encouragement, sort of. I say sort of because some of these post-it notes gave me comfort, and some of them made me smile, and some of them just made me angry. There were notes that were clearly written by children. One of them was on a napkin, and it was in newly learned handwriting. And it said, "Don't be a winner, don't be a loser, just be yourself." But then, inches away from that was another note on a post-it that said, "You only get to live each day once. Don't waste it on being sad. Don't waste it on being sad." And what if you, or what if your family member is facing something really hard, and you actually don't know how it's going to turn out? You can't be sad. Thankfully, though, just inches away from that note was another one. This was from The Wisdom of Dory, as in Finding Nemo. It said, "Just keep swimming!" And then there was also a little bit of Anglicanism in there, thanks to C.S. Lewis. There's a post-it that read, "Hardships can prepare ordinary people for an extraordinary destiny." Hardships can prepare ordinary people for an extraordinary destiny. There was, of course, the requisite, "God will never give you more than you can handle." Really? Is that how it works? But I think the one that finally just summed it up for me was a post-it that was all the way on the side of this bulletin board. And it read, "God will fix it." And then, in a different handwriting, on the same post-it, someone had written, "Tell her to hurry." Tell her to hurry. For real. Ever since, I have been contemplating this bulletin board. And I suppose really wrestling with this bulletin board and what people have written on it. Because those who walk into this family break room are often in the wilderness or stumbling in the dark. They are at some of the most difficult points of their life. And they're being met with some platitudes. And I understand why the platitudes are there. I mean, the people who wrote those notes intend well. Like when I say a platitude to somebody, I intend well. And if I'm paying attention, I realize what I've said and I wince. I know why we use these words. Whether it's to ourselves or to others, it's because we are uncomfortable with the pain that is being endured. And so we use them to console ourselves, maybe to prop ourselves up, and to protect ourselves. Because the wilderness, the darkness, it can be a frightening and lonely place. And so sometimes what we do is we use these words to hold it at bay, or at least away from us. The voice of our gospel this morning has changed yet again. Over the last 5 weeks, we've heard from all four of these canonical voices, and today it's from the fourth gospel. And yet again, we are where we were last week. We are down by the River Jordan with this wild character. Again, why? What do we need to hear? Well, one of the things that is different, I'll say it this way. Pop quiz. What does this gospel, the gospel according to John, what does this gospel call this wild character by the River Jordan? Almost. Not the baptizer. The baptizer. Mark calls him John the Baptizer. The Baptist. You would think so too. No, that's what Matthew and Luke call him. John doesn't call him anything except for John. In fact, in this gospel, what we heard is John saying all the things that he is not. He is not the Messiah. He is not Elijah. He is not a prophet. John is a voice of one crying out in the wilderness. You might call him John the Witness, right? That's in the first few verses of our passage today. That John was a witness to testify to the light. He himself was not the light, but came to testify to the light. A witness to testify to the light. I wonder if we're to hear this message this Sunday at the time of the longest nights of the year, to encounter what it is like to witness to the light. Which should be easy, of course, right? I mean, especially in these darkened days, to witness to the light, that light is what helps things grow. Yes. And I was reminded this past Wednesday at our 9 o'clock Eucharist that bearing witness often takes a cruciform shape. You see this in the word witness itself in the Greek. It's martyria. So I wonder if part of why it is hard for us to witness to the light, to compassion, to mercy, to truth, is that in a world that prizes dominance and expediency and self-interest, this will mean sacrifice. I think it's also hard because when we really witness, both in ourselves and in others, when we really go there, we are changed by the encounter. When we go to that place of pain, we are inevitably changed by the experience. And yet, this is what it means. And I think that it's actually in those places of darkness. My experience, it's in those places of pain. That's when our testimony, our witness to the light, comes in ways that are true, in ways that are lasting. It comes when we are willing to be there. And I suppose that's why I was so angry about some of those notes in the family break room, because it was as if they wanted to skip over or dismiss the hardship and the difficulty of life. And by doing that, in those notes, they were pointing the way to a place that is not fruitful, that is not life-giving, that is actually minimizing to the people who are in pain and those who love them. So what is it like then to witness to the light? Well, a friend of mine a couple weeks ago had this experience. Unexpectedly, early in the morning, she found a note on her front door. And she read this post-it, and it said, "You don't have a right to the cards you believe you should have been dealt. You have an obligation to play the hell out of the cards you're holding. You don't have a right to the cards you believe you should have been dealt. You have an obligation to play the hell out of the cards you're holding." Post-it was signed "Love" from a fellow human being. My friend was stunned. It actually brought tears to her eyes because she was in a place of tremendous pain. And this note from a fellow human being met her just where she was. Now, you may have seen these notes. You may yourself have been a recipient of one of these notes. They are all around town. And I think, they're called kind cards. And I'm going to share the story of how they came to be. And I kind of feel like I'm unmasking a secret identity, like Batman or Wonder Woman, That's Bruce Wayne and Diana Prince, for anybody who's not sure. But I have asked and received permission to share this, and it's been shared elsewhere. It started just about a year and a month ago on November 9th, 2016. That would be the day after our last presidential election. And it was a parishioner here at All Souls Parish named Jen Derry. Jen was reeling from the effects of the election, and especially because of the divisive, ugly process that we all endured. And she found solace in a book of quotes, and especially in the title of the book, "Whatever You Are, Be a Good One." Whatever you are, be a good one. It's a quote by Abraham Lincoln. And Jen got some old note cards out, and she wrote, "Whatever you are, be a good one. Love from a fellow human being." She put them in some envelopes, and she wrote four of these notes and placed them on the windshields of parked cars in her neighborhood. And then the next day, she wrote four more notes. And the next day. And she wrote these notes so that people could believe, so that she could believe. And there was nothing political in any affiliation, partisan at all on these cards. After all, Jen says, "We're kind of a mess. No one needs any more political ads. What we need is hope and reconciliation." And so every day since November 9th, 2016, she has written four notes. She's now moved to post-it notes because they stick on the side view mirrors of cars, on storefronts, on airplane bathrooms, BART trains, on our sign here on Cedar. For those of you still doing the math, that's over 1,600 notes that has changed depending on what quotes come to the surface. For 1,600 notes, post-it by post-it, day by day, Jen has steadfastly, resolutely, for friend and for stranger, pointed the way to the light. So maybe that's what it is like to bear witness to the light, to allow the shape and content of our lives to be a testament. Yes, sorrow and apathy and suffering and hatred, they are real. That cannot be denied. But even then, we make our stand. That the light, the love of God, shines in the darkness. And the darkness will not overcome it.